Hello, and welcome to Line One, Your Health Connection. I'm your guest host, Wesley Early, and today we're talking about love and connection and how they're essential to health and well-being. How can we find love, whether it's a romantic partner or a friend? And once we have it, how can we nourish it to make it last? Join us today on Line One, Your Health Connection. So if you're a regular listener to our programming, you may be aware of our series, Alaska Survival Kit, where we try to give practical advice to our audience for living in the 49th state. And while I typically cover city government and local news in Anchorage as a reporter, I took a small break in February to answer the question, how do you find love in Alaska? Before we dive into the topic, let's give that story a listen. Here's Alaska News Nightly host Casey Grove introducing it.
Well, the odds are good, but the goods are odd. It's a familiar joke in Alaska, and for some people trying to date here, it can feel painfully true. But with Valentine's Day just around the corner, is there a way to swing the odds of finding that special someone in your favor? For our Alaska Survival Kit series, Alaska Public Media's Wesley Early set out to learn how Alaskans can increase their chances of finding a date and falling in love.
It's about 14 degrees outside Anchorage's Magnetic North Brewing Company, but the vibe is much warmer inside. It's about a dozen people meet for a singles night. Josiah Smith, a single guy from the Kenai Peninsula, was part of a small group near the front of the brewery. I caught him as he walked into a larger room where people were mingling. He came to meet people in person instead of using a dating app, which he says can feel like playing an awkward game.
You have to come up with something catchy, and I can't do it. And I don't want to. It's like, if I say hello back, and I say, how are you doing? And then it's like, I'm blah, blah, blah from this place. And where are you from? And go from there.
Now, I haven't been single since I started dating my wife in 2019, but I've heard concerns like Josiah's from friends and colleagues. Dating in Alaska can be tough. So how do you make it easier? I spoke with experts and came back with four main takeaways. Josiah may not want to hear the first one. Don't snub the apps. That's from Marcia Shirak Olson. She's a communications professor at the University of Alaska Anchorage who's worked as a professional matchmaker. And she says dating apps might actually be for you. She says if you're on the dating app looking for something real, chances are there are others too. She calls it the gross bar example.
You walk into a kind of a dive bar and you're like, oh, it's kind of gross in here and everyone doesn't seem that great. But I'm here and I'm pretty cool. And if I'm here, then maybe there's someone else like me who's here.
Marcia says many of her friends over the past 10 to 15 years have met their partners through dating apps. But if you're going to use them, she says you should be specific about what you're looking for and be authentic. In other words, takeaway two, be yourself.
If you are not outdoorsy and you don't hunt and fish, like if the only time you've ever been fishing is the time that you have that one photo from, like don't lean in that hard to that. Maybe disclose that this is my one fish.
But maybe you've been on the apps for a while and you really want to meet someone the old-fashioned way. That brings us to takeaway three, get out of the house. Marcia says socializing can mean going to singles events, but she says it can also mean just hanging out with your friends. It just has to be in public.
Going out and sitting and chit-chatting with your friends, that opens up your social circle. That means you could potentially meet more people. That brings your potential partner in. It also develops you into an interesting person because now you have friends and interests, and that's important because a good partner has interests. They have a life.
Finding a date in a city like Anchorage with tens of thousands of residents is one thing, but finding one in a smaller community is another, says Anchorage-based relationship therapist Amber Vile. She's lived in Alaska a long time, in communities big and small. More rural communities often have a much smaller dating pool, and it may be difficult to find the one. But Amber says you shouldn't let that stand in the way of making connections with people. So here's takeaway four. You can forget forever. For now.
I'm not sure I'm going to meet the person of my dreams. So can I pivot here and like have some fun? Can I just connect? Can I explore what it's like to like date a lot of different people or date nobody and date myself, right?
And if you're already in a relationship but want to keep the romance alive, I've got a bonus tip just for you. Amber says as relationships progress, couples can often get bogged down with lots of other things like careers, children, and the stresses of everyday life. She suggests couples do a marriage Monday. Now, it doesn't have to be a Monday and you don't have to be married, but essentially it's time you've set specifically for you and your partner to come together, just the two of you.
You play, you mix it up, right? You take a class together, you read a book together, you're doing something that says, I'm turning towards you, you're all I see, I'm putting my phone down, I'm not working, let's go enjoy.
Right? Someone's watching the kids.
Yeah, get a babysitter, right?
Maybe that marriage Monday can be on Valentine's Day. Personally, I'm going to try my hand at French cooking for my wife. Now, I've never made a sauce from scratch or seared a steak with peppercorns, but I'm hoping it'll be a nice restaurant quality meal we can share at home. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Wesley Early. And that steak did turn out pretty good, if I do say so myself. Well, today we're going to expand on the topic of love, health, and well-being here on Line One. We've got one of the guests that I spoke to for that story in studio, Amber Vile. She's a relationship therapist in Anchorage. Hi, Amber.
Hi.
And also in the studio, we have Susie Carter, the publisher of Alaska Men Magazine, which has spent decades trying to find matches for some of the state's men. Thanks so much for joining us, Susie.
Thank you.
And we've got another counselor, Jay Stanton. And Gregor joining us via Zoom. Jay is also a therapist based in Petersburg. Jay, thanks so much for being with us.
Good morning, and thank you for having me.
So I really want to start kind of broad today. You know, how and why is love and connection healthy? This is a health show, and we're talking about well-being. You know, Amber, I'd like to start with you. When we spoke before, you mentioned that connection doesn't just make you feel better emotionally, but there are also physical benefits.
Yeah, absolutely. Having connections and being able to explore those things with people, they broaden one, like just interests in general, but they offer companionship and support and encouragement when you don't actually realize that you need it. And there's a lot of research that shows that having people in your life that you feel safe with just really helps with just stress hormones and physical activity, getting out, enjoying things, inspiration for doing new things, and overall just support when you're feeling really low and down, that someone sees you, someone says, man, you know, I want to be there for you. It's huge.
Yeah, and, you know, following up on that, what are the downsides to, like, not being social, to not making these types of connections, to sort of isolating yourself?
Yeah, isolation, it does a number on our mental health. You know, we suddenly, our blinders are on, we're not able to get out and experience the world in a way that we're meant to. And a lot of depression and a lot of other mental health issues arise when we just feel like no one has our back, you know?
Yeah. You know, Jay, we were talking earlier about, you know, ways that you were able to observe people finding connections in the community of Petersburg. You know, talk a little about that, because I think that one of the things we really want to get at is that there's a wide swath of relationship, right? Whether it's romantic or platonic.
Absolutely, Wesley. Let me back up to something Amber said that I think is very valid to this point of, you know, feeling connection and feeling belonging. You know, the research is very solid that it does lower our stress hormones, and bringing that to Petersburg and the different connections people have. For those who don't know Petersburg, it's an island of approximately 3,000 people in our borough. And it has a really robust community, whether it be through our local radio station, KFSK, which has a variety of community members a part of that, you know, a variety of book clubs, running clubs, the community pool is a center here, where, like, from my own world, a group of people I don't see all that often, but every Saturday morning from 7 to 8, they're the unspoken sauna club, you know, these different layers of, you know, whether acquaintanceship, friendship, or connection. But even on the smaller levels, it is all pieces of connection.
Yeah, and, you know, Susie, you've worked with a lot of people who've been looking for connections for a long time, and you've remained in contact with many of them. You know, what can you say have been your observations about how connections have helped out these Alaska men?
Well, you know, they just need to get out and communicate. And I see the big changes in them too. And I find the biggest thing that men who are not around people very much, they don't even know how to smile. I tell them, go to the mirror and smile. And one guy, he couldn't make his mouth smile. I said, you need to practice. Women like to see smiles. And practice so that you don't look like an axe murderer smile. You look like a friendly smile. And one guy, he said, "Well, I don't smile." And I said, "Why not?" He said, "I don't have any teeth." And I said, "Why not?" And he said, "I was in a car wreck." And I said, "How long ago?" And he said, 8 years. I said, "Get some teeth. Women like teeth."
You know, you had also brought up that, you know, you've had some people who've been the Alaska Men who, you mentioned one man who kind of, he had a terminal disease, I think, for a while.
Yes, cancer.
Yeah, talk a little about his experience with that.
Yeah, he was nominated to be in the magazine, and I contacted him, and he said, "I'm not going to do it." He said, "I don't even have any hair now. I've got cancer. They told me 3 months to live." And I said, "Carl, you know, you need to have some kind of interaction in your life and be happy." And so I talked him into it, and he started getting all this mail, and he said, "People are contacting me. It's wonderful." And one gal actually flew from Germany. She was a nurse, and helped him with his children. He was a widower. And you know what? Those 3 months passed. They got married. 6 months passed. And he kicked it. He's still alive today. Wow. So love can change you.
You know, and I should have started this with, you know, this is line one. I am not a doctor. I should let the audience know. But, you know, a lot of this is anecdotal. But that does kind of address the idea that, you know, having, you know, even when you don't think you've got all that much time left, like having those connections can be really valuable. You know, one thing I want to touch on, too, is I think that the more I've been thinking about this, that there's so many different types of relationships. And, you know, Jay, you had a really interesting metaphor kind of breaking down those different levels of relationships. Can you describe it a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely, Wesley. When I think of relationships, this is not a me original. I don't remember where I grabbed it, but I really like it. The metaphor of the house. For me, the living room is inner sanctum, the most intimate place, and for the metaphor of friendship and connection and relationships. You know, in my living room, I've got my wife, Leah, my son and daughter, a handful of really close friends that I would do anything for, and then me, that I would be as vulnerable as needed with them and them with me. That's a really small group, and I'm glad to, you know, I think we need some of those in our life. And as we branch out, though, you can go to, let's say, the entryway. You can have some really good people in your life that aren't all the way in, but are still really important to you, that are worthwhile being in the entryway of your life. Branch out from there, excuse me, to the porch. You can have some really good people. That might be a friend from a book club, an exercise group on the porch that you may not be particularly deep with, but it's still a very meaningful and nourishing relationship. You can branch out to the yard also. I can just off the top of my head think of some people that I'd consider them in the yard of my life, maybe a close acquaintance where we'll go for a hike now and again. I don't know a ton about their family or their background, but I very much value them and I'm glad to have them in my life. And if you go all the way to the edge of the yard, maybe there's some people on the other side of the fence that they cross paths with you now and again. Something from the island, you know, we go to the post office to pick up our mail. Occasionally you'll end up on the same timeline for like 3 weeks straight to be in the post office line with someone where light chit-chat and learn a little bit about them. They might not even be in your yard, but they're on the other side of the fence. But I value all those different relationships, and I think they're important for all of us to cultivate and then curate those relationships, whether they be on the other side of the fence or in the living room itself, and putting whatever effort seems appropriate for those relationships.
Yeah, I often think about, you know, the difference between friends that I knew when I was younger, friends that I got when I was older, coworkers, you know, it's people who, for the most part, I'm probably not going to see you a lot outside of the hours of 9 to 5, but how do you have those relationships sort of as they happen? One that I was joking about with all of you was, since I got married, my wife's friends' partners, you know, like guys who I'm really only ever going to see when my wife and her friend are around, right? But it doesn't mean that you can't sort of have a relationship and be cordial and still learn something. We'll move on in a bit, but we do have a caller on the line, Lawrence, who is calling from the state of Georgia. Lawrence, welcome to Line One.
Thank you so much. I think you've got a great show, and this is a great topic. So my situation is, I'm 70 years young, straight, single guy. I just wonder, you know, what advice or tips you would have for, like, a senior dating? My thing is, I travel a lot. I'm retired. I love traveling. So, of course, you know, when you travel a lot, it's hard to meet. It's hard to have a stable relationship, per se. So what advice can you give me, please?
Opening the floor to our panel.
Well, being a single senior myself, I totally understand. It's very difficult, especially, I think, up here in Alaska, there are most of the senior men are married. And my friend said, well, Susie, how do you find a date? And I said, I usually take a shovel with me. I can dig somebody up. But the best thing I can say is to go to the senior center, meet people there. If you're at the grocery store, I know it sounds like a cliche, but if there's somebody there shopping, and just strike up a conversation and say, hey, those are great tomatoes, aren't they?
Yeah, and you know, one of the things Amber and I were talking about is about sort of intention. So kind of like knowing what you're looking for in a relationship, you know, like, are you looking for a companion? Are you looking for someone maybe more romantic? Are you at 77 looking for your next wife? You know, I think, can you talk a little about intention, Amber?
Yeah, I think intention is so fabulous in relationships because it's kind of your guiding principle. You know, it slows everything down around you and it helps you focus in on what really matters and what you're looking for. And it sounds like you're doing some awesome travels and having some fun, and what kind of person do you want to have along the way with those adventures, you know?
Jay, anything to add?
Yeah, I'm glad you called, Lawrence. The only piece of feedback I would add is, as you're on your journeys, is be genuine. I'm a believer that on any kind of timeline, we can sense people being genuine or the opposite of that. You know, if someone is not being genuine, we can feel that too if we're putting on a front. So be your genuine self, and I like how Amber said that, be intentional. I'm wishing you luck, man. Good luck.
Yeah. Thanks so much for calling, Lawrence.
Yeah, I notice people have a social veneer. You know, you get to know somebody and you think you know them, but they are just being, that's their social veneer. Mm. And you really get to know them after you've known them for about 3 months. Then they start being themselves, and then you say, hey, this guy's pretty cool.
Yeah, nothing wrong with, you know, getting a bunch of new friends, Lawrence, and then letting people know who you are and kind of growing from there. Well, thanks so much for calling. You know, one thing I'm really curious about in this discussion is how the definition of relationship has changed in my lifetime, especially with the advent of social media. Mm-hmm. It seems like a lot more connection is happening virtually. But even before we had social media, you know, Susie, you were helping facilitate connections that weren't face-to-face with the Alaska Men magazine to pretty great success. Can you talk about the ways that you navigated that distance when trying to foster relationships?
Well, it was kind of hard, and some, especially here in Alaska, some of the places, you know, they had not even telephones at that time. So a lot of the interviewing I had to do, I would have to actually drive there and interview them in person, which was really amazing sometimes. One time it was a whole room of about 50 men. And I didn't know whether to run or to stay. So they were all so interested and so sincere and so hopeful. So, you know, it was wonderful meeting them all and helping them. And, you know, nobody had ever done anything like a magazine like this before, so I had to figure out how in the world are they going to communicate. So we only had the postal system, so they'd have to write letters. And then I'm like, okay, how are they going to write the letters? So I had to become the post office. I'd get the letters, and then I would forward them. So it's been a growing experience for me to, you know, we didn't have the internet then, and we didn't have computers. You know, all we had was letters.
Well, there's no Tinder fairy sort of magically taking all of your messages. That's a lot of hard work. Well, you're listening to Line 1, your health connection on Alaska Public Media. We're going to take a short break. And when we return, we're going to explore more on how to form romantic and platonic relationships and how to make them last. Welcome back to Line 1, your health connection on Alaska Public Media. I'm your guest host, Mr. Not Dr. Wesley Early. And today we're talking about love, health, and well-being. Joining us today is Amber Vile. She's a relationship therapist in Anchorage who specializes in couples. Also in the studio, we have Susie Carter, the publisher of Alaska Men Magazine. And on Zoom, we've got Jay Stanton Greger, who's also a therapist based in Petersburg. So before we went on break, we were talking a bit about how relationships have changed a bit and we communicate a lot more virtually these days. And I'm curious, Amber, you know, as we communicate more virtually, you know, do you think that there's something like lost there? But also, do you think like we're gaining anything from sort of the new ways that we can communicate with all of the relationships in our lives?
Yeah, absolutely. Things are lost. And I was just thinking, Susie, as you were talking about letter writing, man, sitting down, writing a letter, having your thoughts, being really, again, intentional is so different than like a haphazard like on Facebook, yep. You know, I mean, it's just so there's a shallowness that social media produces that it's really hard to get down to know somebody. And
well, when you say that, I think to myself of how many men I've interviewed that have no idea what they want in a woman.
Yes.
I mean, absolutely nothing. One guy said, breathing. I was like, okay, that's a start. So,
check.
You know, and I said, okay, let's just sit down. What do you not like? What is it you absolutely don't want?
Yeah.
So I made him make a list. And then I said, okay, that narrows it down. You know what you don't want. Now, what do you want? You know, and we'd go to the thing, physical, personality, humor, you know, everything I could think of, what she wants you to look like. I mean, it's so funny. One guy said, I absolutely want a blonde. She's got to be petite, never married, and financially wealthy. And I said, okay.
Yeah,
well, it's like shopping. This
magic yeah. formula. Yeah.
So he comes back to me in about 6 weeks, and he said, I'm getting married. And I said, great. Did you get what you wanted? Well, I did. She's wonderful. She's got black hair. She has 5 kids. She's financially destitute, and she loves me wonderfully.
Well, you know, not to poo-poo on social media, but, you know, Jay and I, we were talking about how even though social media can often seem like it's not as personal, you know, there are some benefits to, you know, reminders of the people that are in your life.
Yeah, I'd gladly speak to that, Wesley. For those listening, not that it's relevant, I'm 49, mid-Gen Xer, so when I graduated high school, there, I say this sheepishly, but I got my first Hotmail email account back in 1995. It dates me, I have to accept that, which I still kept that email. But as you know, I moved through life, going about life, kept in contact with some people, some not, and that would be through landlines, writing letters, as you guys were speaking about, and the occasional then moved on to cell phones with the clunky text messages, then with flip phones. And then, you know, social media became, you know, late 2000s. I'll use myself joining the Facebook realm in 2008. And I'm like, okay, this is cool. I was using it for some business and whatnot. But then people become crawling out of the woodwork. I'm like, some that I was excited to hear. I'm like, oh, I've always wondered what happened to so-and-so, and I've been able to reconnect some of those relationships. And of course, some were like, we weren't really friends when we were 17. This is definitely not going to be a thing now. And we have to navigate the complexities of that. But I'm grateful for those platforms in the sense of it's, you know, now transcended Facebook to, you know, talk on phone. Or if I'm back in Wisconsin where I grew up, we cross paths. I would add one other piece, because I think both of these things cut both ways from the relationship aspect of social media or online platforms. Living in Petersburg, and this is a different form of connection and relationship. For those struggling, let's say, with addiction, you may have only one or two AA meetings per week, and people may be sheepish about going to them because of a small island where it isn't particularly anonymous. The online platforms of Alcoholics Anonymous meetings or NA meetings, you can find one anywhere in the country at any time of day, pretty much, to find a connection to people who can relate to you. And I wanted to shoehorn that in there because I think that has been very valuable in that very niche arena of helping people with relationships and support.
Yeah, and you know, one of the things that I've been kind of mindful of is my more queer friends, you know, they find that it's a lot easier to communicate online because you can sort of create, you can sort of self-select communities where you feel safer. One other thing that Jay mentioned, I was trying to prod out of Jay, is that Facebook reminds you when people's birthdays are. And like that's such a subtle thing. You know, I don't think anybody except for my grandmother like remembers everybody's birthday anymore. I don't even remember a lot of phone numbers anymore. And so it's, you know, it's absolutely, I think that there are sort of issues where there is that distance. It can be hard to like be face to face to somebody. There are a lot of things you get from a face-to-face interaction that you can't really get virtually, but you know, there are some of those benefits from a virtual connection, you know, and I really appreciate that you brought up the idea of people who can go to AA meetings online, and where, you know, those are relationships, you know, those are connections people are making, and those are, you know, supports that, you know, come from a very specific background, but they're still supports nonetheless.
And they're accessible.
Yeah, super accessible. You know, a lot of this discussion is centered around romantic love and romantic relationships, but there's a lot people can get out of friendships. But as you get older, at least in my experience, it can be harder to make those new connections. I think we've got a lot going on in our lives, whether you have kids, you have your career, just, you know, any other sort of things that you've committed to, commitments, you know, but I'd like to open this question to the group. What are challenges of making new connections, and how can we anticipate and overcome those challenges?
I think one thing you and I talked about earlier, Wesley, was time. It takes a lot of time and mental capacity to be able to say, I think I want to spend some time with this one person, or I'm really interested. You know, I think one of the things about, we were talking about social media, and it's just, it allows us to be really quick. And I think spending time in nurturing relationships requires us to set aside things and make sacrifices in other areas that maybe a lot of people aren't willing to do so readily.
I think too, when you put yourself out there to be a friend, the one thing I've noticed that you need to do is to carry a bucket. Okay, everybody has problems. You got to be there to hold the bucket for them to pour all those troubles out, because most people have nobody that they can tell their troubles to. And just you being there for them can do amazing things for their lives.
Yeah. And, you know, Jay, I know that you've done a lot of work with kids and helping them to be more social and to form relationships. How did you get into that? And is that advice all that different for adults?
I mean, here's my work with kids. I originally got into the field working with at-risk kids in more of a wilderness therapy setting in Montana years ago. And our executive director always harped on the word relationship. Like, a lot of these kids come from either marginal backgrounds of any kind, or either way they're struggling. And being a stable person, form a relationship with, was critical. And the staff we worked with at the time, we were all, you know, mid-20s, and we found ourselves practicing what we preached with each other. Some of my strongest bonds and relationships, you know, come from that time, because we accepted vulnerability. So in terms of fast forward till now, as adults forming adult relationships in Alaska, not being afraid of some vulnerability. If you're actually sitting with someone, and I don't mean the casual American greeting, hey, how's it going, Wesley? Because I think we use that dismissively at times. And if someone answers us genuinely, you're like, why are you giving me your life story? That's not what I meant. But if you're with someone and someone asks you a genuine question, it's okay to be vulnerable. I think a lot of us are looking for opportunities to be appropriately vulnerable. It feels good. It builds deeper, more nourishing relationships. So if I were to put a fine point on it, not to be afraid to take small risks in that realm and to see who is worthy of being vulnerable with.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the things that I've been really thinking about in the last few years, you mentioned we were talking earlier, you've got a daughter who's about in elementary age, and she would have sort of come of age during the pandemic, which is a time period where we were kind of encouraged to not be around each other, you know, and and in this time where kids are really meeting people for the first time, you know, if it's not your neighborhood kids, you're meeting kids in school probably for the first time. You know, what's something you've noticed as you know, this very core developmental time in a kid's life got disrupted? You know, are you seeing the impacts of that in your work?
I think that's a great question, Wesley. And to be clear, I think that's going to be a long-term longitudinal study to see the effects of that age group. For my daughter in particular, Margot is in her first year of preschool, and then March of 2020 came along and everyone goes home and they don't really understand what's happening. Because at that developmental age, I mean, they're still learning to stand in a line, maybe not bite their peer when they don't get their way, et cetera, et cetera. As much as little kids are wonderful, but they're a bit feral. We all know this, anyone who's been a parent. What I've seen from that group, though, and my family was very lucky. My wife and I did not use childcare at the time, so we were able to curate relationships, you know, with our children outside of the house, whether it be going for walks, etc. But not everyone was as privileged, and I acknowledge that. And as we rolled into the second year of preschool here and into kindergarten, et cetera, and I've talked about this with some of the educators here, we have seen some of those more social-emotional delays. That doesn't mean they cannot catch up, of course. Kids are the most very resilient. They have wonderful neuroplasticity. But I will be fascinated by some of the longer-term studies, fast forward, let's say, another 20 years to see what that batch of kids, where they ended up, quote-unquote, and by the different metrics of success.
Yeah. And, I was thinking a lot about what you were saying about, taking small risks. You know, Susie, one of the things I'm really fascinated about your work is, what drives these men to reach out to you in the first place, And, what have you heard from the Alaska men as far as the challenges that they had to finding romantic partners? And then what sort of said, I'm going to reach out to Susie.
Yeah, I'm kind of the universal mom. Everybody just assumes I'm their mom. So I don't know why, but they just feel like they can talk to me, and I'm there for them. And it's a wonderful thing to kind of have that feeling. You almost feel like an earth mom. And it's wherever I'm at. If I'm in Japan or if I'm in Germany, I travel all over the world and do speaking engagements. And they'll come up to me and tell me, their whole life story, and reach out to me. And I think it's that reaching out, and they know that I am touchable, that I am there for them. I look in their eyes, and they know that. And I think we need that more physical, especially in the light of all the COVID and all. If you have the opportunity, just reach out and touch somebody on their arm. Or I'm a big hugger. Give people hugs.
Oh, yeah, Susie, me too.
Yeah. And it's we've lost a lot of that physicalness. And even shaking hands, people weren't even shaking hands anymore. So whenever somebody shakes hands with me, it's like, great, I'm there. We're touching.
Yeah, and as you had sort of the Alaska men, like, what were sort of the reasons they were giving you, like, man, it's because of this reason, it's been really hard for me to find a partner.
Yeah, usually it's work. A lot of the men have the work on the slope, and so they're, 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off, and then they get off work, and they just want to sleep for 3 days to catch up. And then 3 days of sleep, and then 3 days of catching up on bills and helping the kids with their homework or whatever. And if they're lucky, they'll get 1 day to go out and meet somebody. And so that's the difficulties that they're getting around. And one man told me, he said, I haven't had a date for 8 years. And I said, who lives next door to you? And he says, I don't know. I said, go over and introduce yourself. Oh, he ended up marrying her.
Gosh, you just have the magic touch, don't you? Amber, it was kind of what you were talking about earlier with, like, time, time management. It's so difficult, especially the older you get, the more responsibilities and commitments you have. Yeah. In the story we listened to earlier, you were talking about smaller communities, meaning smaller dating pools.
Yeah.
And that pool can be even smaller for, people seeking queer relationships or other types of friendships. Can you talk a bit about the challenges of small dating pools and how to anticipate them?
I think you're only going to be able to have what's available to you. So first being able to put yourself out there and being willing to be vulnerable, as we've been talking about, is pretty big. But if you're not finding what you're looking for, I think it's okay to just reorganize what you're doing there and just really focus in on what is it that I'm focusing in on? What's my intention in this moment in my life? And you may not find that person in that moment. And that's okay. It's okay to be vulnerable and hang out with friends in that friendship capacity, because a lot of wonderful things can bloom just from simple friendships.
Yeah, and Jay, I don't know why it didn't dawn on me until now, but, like, you live in a small community of about 3,000 people. What do you notice is sort of the difficulties in trying to help people with relationships and just what relationship troubles there are in a community like Petersburg?
That's a pretty broad one, but I'll try to hit on it. From a single person's lens, I work with lots of folks who are across the age spectrum. Dating in a smaller community, I think the word smaller community needs to be amplified when you think of Ireland, because Ireland is more of a closed system. I think it cuts both ways. It can be very challenging for people I've worked with in the sense of like, oh gosh, like I know so much about this person already from X, Y, or Z connection. Then it's almost like without wanting to or choosing to, you're getting a reference check by default from living in a small community. The flip side of that, though, also is, and I mean, it's a little flippantly, but it does save you some time vetting people because you know a lot about them already also. But I think for people living in a smaller community, I think you have to go with almost more increased vulnerability again. I'm going to come back to that word of, okay, I'm living on this island. I started dating this person. Do we actually go out in public together, go to a basketball game, be seen? You know, these are some things that I'd not thought of, you know, having grown up in near Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and then lived in Montana, but in a smaller, close community. Those are real things, and I would never minimize those with people because there is an anxiety of like, okay, we're public now. What does that mean? And also, what if it doesn't work? Then what? I find it inherently challenging. I feel very grateful that I moved here with my wife and didn't have to navigate that on my own.
Yeah, no, I was just thinking about the fact that when I moved to a small Alaska community, I was already dating my wife. And so I didn't need to like have that idea. Because I remember when I was like in high school, when you're in such small capacity quarters with people, the thought is like, oh man, like maybe I like this person, but what if it doesn't work? This is somebody I'm going to see like every day. there's a sort of, there's an awkwardness, but you know, it's really interesting what you said before about it. It's always kind of a risk, right? There's always the risk to having relationships, whether they're romantic or platonic.
I was just going to say, I think it's also good to just recognize what is drawing me to this person. Because if you're just in a small place and you're just wanting to pass time, you may not find the quality relationship that you're wanting. But if there's something there, what is that? You know, it's so cool to lean into that and be curious and have that be the draw.
Yeah.
Yeah, I might mention too, mothers are a great source. They know what kind of woman the guy needs. I mean, and they tell me, I get most of my nominations from mothers. They'll call me and say, he needs to get out of the house. He needs to get married. And they'll tell me everything, you know. Go to your mom and ask her, who do you think would be good for me?
You know, it's funny. There's a lot of modern pushback around, like, the idea of an arranged marriage. But, like, in hindsight, it's a pretty great system because it's, like, who can look at you objectively and, like, connect with someone else who can look at you objectively. I remember the guy Josiah in the story we talked about earlier, you know, he was talking about how he actually felt more comfortable in his like Kenai Peninsula community because he knew that like if he was going to be at a place, like he knew people that he trusted who could tell him what he thought about the person who he may or may not be interested in. We're going to take another short break here. You're listening to Line One, Your Health Connection. We'll be back and be talking more about love, health, and well-being. And welcome back. This is Line One, Your Health Connection, Alaska Public Media. I'm your guest host, Wesley Early. And today we're talking about love, health, and well-being. Joining me is Amber Vile, a relationship therapist in Anchorage who specializes in couples. We've also got Susie Carter, the publisher of Alaska Men Magazine. And via Zoom, we've got Jay Stanton Gregor, who's a therapist based in Petersburg. So we've talked a lot about why relationships are important to your health. We're talking about sort of the difficulties in finding relationships. But, you know, getting in a relationship is one thing, having that relationship last is another. You know, I'd like to talk a bit about what is the best way to make connections last. And, you know, Susie, I'd like to start with you because we talked a bit about how there's sort of a different mentality when you're dating versus when you're in a long-term relationship. It's almost like having two separate skill sets, right?
Yeah, I like to say, you know, when you're trying to impress somebody, you're trying to sell, it's like selling a car. You know, you want to make sure there's a lot of tread on the wheels and you want it to look good. You polish it up and you really sell that car. And so it's more of a selfish kind of thing, really, because you're selling yourself. You want that person you want to win them over. And then once you get them, it's all about keeping them. you know, or getting them to help you, you know, because love and marriage, it's all give and take. You know, you either grow together or you grow apart. That's it. I can tell you that's the only two choices, because if you're stagnant, it falls apart. It's a constant giving and taking between the two of you, and you have to find that medium.
Yeah, I think when you're single for a long time and you're sort of solely focused on the selling yourself, you know, maybe trying to let people know that you've got, you know, still got a solid engine and low mileage. but you know, when you get to that relationship, it's almost the complete opposite, you know, where you are solely, you're not solely focused on the other person, because you should also focus on yourself in a relationship. But, you know, Jay, one thing I found interesting in our discussion before this was this psychological idea of like moving away and towards your partner in big and little ways. Can you talk a little about how that impacts long-term relationships?
Yeah, absolutely, Wesley. And Amber, you know, touched on it earlier, like turning towards your partner. But I'm John and Julie Gottman, great marriage research people, for those who know Gottman's work. But they talk about that a lot in terms of marriage and other relationships. Of in every interaction we have, we're either moving closer to our partner or moving away. You know, setting aside major, you know, big ticket items, whether it be addiction, violence, infidelity in marriages, things that can just, you know, take the entire train off the tracks. A lot of days can become a grind. You're going through day-to-day, you might have kids, you're probably working, and, you know, like how Susie said, that things can get stagnant, and you're either growing apart or you're growing together. And the Gottmans talk about this, and I push this heavily when I work with couples and individuals, of do the subtle thing. An example, at our house, we have a pretty small kitchen, and we'll be cooking dinner together, and my wife, Lee, will be doing some, I'll just putting my hand on her back, behind you, chef, announcing my presence, a simple act of hand on a shoulder as I move past. Is that some huge big ticket item deepening connection forever? No, but it is subtle and it feels good. And I like it when she does the same. I think there's opportunities for that in all kinds of ways in a relationship. If your partner come home from work, you're exhausted. I'm projecting here. Maybe I've been at home with my kids and I'm exhausted, probably more so than my wife at work. I can take 5 seconds to ask how that was. Or the flip side is if I come home and she's made food for me or has been with the kids, to check in on that, a hand on an arm, you know, these very subtle pieces. But every time we pass by those things too, it can be a subtle moving away. And I think over time, these are highly cumulative and become exponential over time, either towards deeper connection or resentment.
Yeah, you mentioned things like, you know, rolling your eyes. It's a physical thing that literally you are rolling away from your partner.
A subtle moving away, absolutely. And we've all done this, to be clear. These are ideals to work towards. We're, I think, even in the healthiest marriage, we're me moving away. Sometimes we're human. We carry our own baggage. But I think the act of being mindful and doing our best to move towards really carries a lot of weight.
Yeah. And, you know, Amber, I was really curious, you know, you talk a lot about intention and, you know, when you have clients who come to see you, you know, do you find that I don't want to use the word crisis because I worry it's a little too strong of a term because there's a whole spectrum. But, you know, do you find that they are in sort of a relationship crisis, or is it more preventative? Like, you know, we're about to get married and we want to make sure that, like, we're on the same page before we do that.
Yeah. I would say 75-80% are usually something's happening. Mayday, mayday. And a lot of times it's like years really late, you know, they really wanted to do it sooner. And there are a handful of couples that are, we really want to get on the same train here, preventative wise, and that's awesome. And then you have some couples, like surprisingly, who are just knowing that therapy is good, you know, therapy sometimes has a bad rap, but being able to recognize that having a third person in the room to point things out or give, you know, tips and tricks and see them, really see what they're doing and seeing the accomplishments that they're making and normalizing things for them. They love that feeling, I'd like to think, at least.
Yeah. I'm sorry, I think I interrupted you earlier. You were trying to say something.
Oh, I was just going to say that as time has gone on, I've seen that marriage has changed. And it's in the old days, you know, people were like 14 and they'd get married, and then, you know, by 40 they were really old. And so things have evolved, and I have found with a lot of the married couples that you know, come to me for help, that they feel constricted, they feel boxed in, they're trapped in a marriage. And I try to get them to think about what it was like when they first met each other, because if marriage has evolved to become a trap or a box, that they need to assess that and realize it's only their thinking that is doing that. They need to understand that, you know, they love each other.
Yeah. So, yeah. And it's also kind of like what Marcia was saying in the radio story, where, you know, you kind of have to have your own life before you sort of invite somebody else into your life. If everything that you're building towards is this other person, then yeah, you might feel trapped in that because it's all you know. You know, one of the things I've been curious about, Susie, is, you know, you found a lot of success with the Alaska Men magazine, and you're not really aware of a lot of relationships that haven't worked out after being set up. You know, you keep in pretty regular contact with these people. You know, what are the sorts of scenarios you see where, you know, these relationships don't work out?
Well, a lot of the guys are so grateful. They find some girl flies into town, and they'll just... I tell them, you know, take your time, get to know them. And sometimes they just, no, we're going to get married and we're going to go on a honeymoon. And they just met. And I said, you know, you really need to take a little time, because I see the biggest failure rate in a marriage is they don't really know what they're getting into. They're just so happy. They found somebody that likes them, somebody that loves them, or, you know, tells them that. So they just need to really look at the whole scenario and see more than just the immediate.
Yeah, that is crazy to me, the idea of just meeting somebody for the first time and being let's get married.
1 hour.
1 hour?
Yeah.
Between when the guy met and when
the... Wow. She got off the plane and they got married.
You got to give him my number.
Whoa.
I think too, when you say that, what is missing, and I think it's missing in so many relationships, just... when we were talking about what doesn't work in relation, is there's a lack of curiosity, a lack of getting outside of your own head and what you are constructing about what a relationship or marriage should be, and then being curious about this other human being who's very different than you, being curious. What is it like to be curious? And, you know, you're not me and I'm not you, so what is it going to be like to spend this life together? And
It's funny, I just found out, like, 2 weeks ago that my wife, like, learned how to play the guitar when she was younger. And I don't know how it didn't come up in, like, casual conversation. But I remember this, like, there was a feeling of excitement. Like, I know something different about this person that I've known for, like, 7 years. I've known her for longer, but, like, I've been in a relationship with for 7 years. And, like, knowing that, it was such a wow. Like, and my first thought was, like, is this something you'd maybe want, like, a Christmas present? You know, because I'm very particular with gifts, with telling people, like, seriously, tell me what you want, I will get it. Like, I don't want to, you know, I will try to get you something, but I know that you'll be happier if I get you something you want, right? As we're sort of winding down, we're in the last 10 minutes of the show, I'm curious if any of you have any resources for people to, you know, help their relationships, find relationships, whether it's friendships, whether it's romantic relationships.
Yeah, I actually heard about this relationship information you could get at the bookstore, where it's a list of questions that you can ask, just like you said about not knowing your wife learn how to play the guitar. Mm-hmm. And you can just go down and, you know, what kind of flowers do you like? Or have you ever thought about going to Thailand or whatever, and it helps with information. And I'm sure people out there in your audience have their great suggestions on it too.
Yeah, you know, it's Amber, did you want to say something?
Oh no, I have a plethora of ideas, but go ahead.
Yeah, I mean couples therapy is one. Yeah. I'm sure.
Well, couples therapy is one, of course. Yeah, there's lots of books out there, and I love what you were just saying, because there's actually card decks that you can get that, you know, take on a car ride and you just pull it out, and they cover sort of more surfacey stuff to really deep questions that, you know, instigate some curiosity. Mm-hmm. And
everything from raising children to relationships with cousins or ex-husbands or whatever.
Yeah, to, you know, favorite type of cotton candy.
And Jay, any sort of resources that you have for people who are either trying to foster or build relationships?
Yeah, I'll look at it from a romantic love angle. I would, and for free resources, which are my favorite, YouTube is a treasure trove. John and Julie Gottman have tons of videos on there on marriage. I think if someone's into more emotional focus therapy, EFT stuff, Sue Johnson has tons of good stuff for free on YouTube. But I want to quickly circle back to something Amber said that I find so lovely, and I'm so glad you brought it up about being the curiosity aspect. One of my, especially in a marriage, one of my closest friends up here turned 79 this October, and they've been married for a pile of years, you know, 50 plus probably. And when his name's Bob, what I respect so much about Bob is he's naturally and genuinely curious, one, about the world around him, and two, still about his wife. We get together, we'll be having coffee, eating a meal at their place, and he's just genuinely curious, and she, him. So the idea of, you know, maintaining a genuine curiosity about your partner, whether you've been together for 3 months or 50 years, I think is, one, I think it takes practice. It is easy to get into a rut.
That's great.
But boy, when I see that in play, I find it to be one of the most beautiful things ever. So I'm just going to push the curiosity factor.
All right. Well, we do have another caller coming in, actually from Petersburg. His name is Mike. Mike, thanks so much for joining Line 1.
Yeah, I've been listening to your program about platonic relationships as well as love relationships. I was born here in Petersburg. I'm 85. We didn't have a cell phone or a radio or a television or any of those sorts of things when I was growing up. So we got to know people by doing things with them. I mean, that's how you get to know a partner as well. And working together, playing together, being in the woods together, hunting, fishing, playing basketball, playing ping pong, I don't care what it is. You can learn more about a person. I can learn more about a person in one day on a fishing boat, just working with them without saying a word. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, you go from that to communicating. But I've been married for 64 years.
Oh, wow.
And, my wife is from Syracuse, New York. I brought her to Petersburg, told her I was taking her to God's country, flew in here on a rainy, windy, nasty day, drove down one of the poorest sections in town. And in spite of all that, we survived. And we built a house that was not finished. It had plywood floors, wasn't insulated. Our water froze up, sewer froze up. We didn't have a telephone, didn't have a radio. She came from Syracuse where she had all those things, television, three kids, and diapers. I mean, you work through these things, and you get to know each other by doing things together. I fell in love with her when I first saw her. She walked in the door, I turned and looked at her, and we were instantly in love. We could have gotten married that day and would have survived just fine, but we took the time to get to know each other. But I think in a small town, especially like Petersburg, just working alongside people and being in nature is incredible for adding to relationships. And then through that, you get to know people heart to heart. And so that's been my experience.
Yeah, no, you're bringing her to God's country. I hope she didn't think God was mad at you that day with all the storms. Well, I really appreciate, we're coming to our final minutes on the show. And I want to thank all of you for talking to us about relationships, both platonic and romantic, and how they do with well-being. You know, I'm wondering if I could give each of you about 30 seconds to kind of sum up your final thoughts. We'll start with you, Susie.
Okay, let's see. Well, how about if I come to Petersburg and interview all your single men down there? I usually do. I go to all over places and interview, and a lot of the mothers put it together. So it's a fun thing. So I'm there for them, and I like to do fundraisers for nonprofits, and I'll do bachelor auctions and stuff like that. So I tell people I do takeout.
Jay, anything you'd like to add? Final thoughts?
Yeah, very briefly, in terms of platonic relationships, don't be afraid of a little vulnerability. As we get older, it is harder to make close relationships, I think, or maybe we can be more hesitant to. A little bit of vulnerability, don't be afraid of it. And In terms of intimate married relationships, like I kind of closed on before, try to move towards your partner, especially when you're frustrated with them. That's the time you want to pull away most, when I'm driving my wife nuts or vice versa. I know it's my inclination to want to pull back, but I think those are the most important times to move towards our partners.
And Amber, any final thoughts on love and well-being and relationships?
Sure. I think overall, just strive to be kind. We're all suffering in our own ways, and the world is kind of a crazy place. And I think it's really nice when we can just sort of settle in with someone next to us and be our best selves.
All right. Well, thanks so much to our guests, Amber Vile, Susie Carter, and Jay Stanton Greger. Also, thank you to our audio engineer, Crystal Hyde, and our producer, Rachel Cassandra. You can find more information on this and previous programs on our website, alaskapublic.org. You can tell us your thoughts or suggestions by emailing line1@alaskapublic.org. This has been Line One, Your Health Connection. I'm guest host Wesley Early. Thank you.
Line One is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants, and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters. Learn more about Line One and listen online at alaskapublic.org. This is Alaska Public Media.